There's rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
Obey me! Obey me!
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel in.
Put out all points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order. A new world order.
Attention.
A new world order.
Attention.
The government is
an emergency. Repeat. An emergency.
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens. What kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones, Dutch Jones
radio program.
And now for something completely different.
I have absolutely nothing to confess before this panel. I am Dutch Jones. It is February 8th, 2011. It is approximately 5.02 p.m. Pacific time, Left Coast time. If you're listening any other time, it's not live. We do have numbers to call in. The number to call in is 559-561-8225. If you want to contact us by email, it's dutch@dutchjones.info. dutch@dutchjones.info. And who am I and what are we doing? We are doing whatever we can to spread the Christian militant worldview, share with you the Christian worldview, the separatist Christian worldview, the, let's get together and sing Kumbaya. No, that's not it. We're trying to get you people ready to face whatever's going to be thrown at us from this decrepit, decaying, falling apart society we're in. We have hope for a future, but we know that we still have to prepare for calamity. It's kind of a strange balancing act I portray. Sometimes I go a little more towards the, oh, it's all going to fall apart, you better be ready. And other times I go, well, you know, it may not happen today, it may not happen tomorrow, but be ready for it. Kind of changes with my moods, but I'm human and I fluctuate just like everybody else does within certain operational parameters. But we're coming to you right now live from Cahuilla Commonwealth in Central California, about 1,000 feet above the valley floor of the San Joaquin Valley, the breadbasket of most of America. More produce is grown here than any other one place in America. We're responsible for about 40% of the food that grows that gets shipped all over the United States and the world. Because of current economic things and man-made droughts and just corruption, this place is turning into a great big giant ghetto. So we're on the front lines. We're experiencing the crime, the deception of the politicians, the natural disasters that occur, you know, on their own time. And so we kind of get a good feel for what it's like to have to survive. So we're not just training, we're also practicing what we put forth. And we're just trying to let people know we're here, people of a like mind, that we do exist and that they can either take what we're doing and make it happen in their own community, or join us here. That's my primary goal. I'm a recruiter and an outreach person and a trainer. There needs to be a new word for that, but that's what I do. I try to prepare our people, invite other people in to share with our training, and hopefully they decide to stay, but if not, they take nuggets of the holy cause of liberty with them, because it is a holy cause of liberty. What we are not racist, we are not anti-government, we're not Marxist. We're not communal. We're not Nazis. We're not Christian Israelitism. We're not anti-Semitic, but we're not pro. But we are, and we're not pro-Israel. So we're not anti-Semitic, but we will train little old Jewish ladies to defend themselves against the great unclean hordes that dwell in the cities they live in. Basically, our biggest enemy is going to be the refugees that the New World Order is going to create when they destroy our economy. I mean, they're already in the process of it. So it sounds good over there? You got headphones on?
No, I
you had them on? You can hear me? Okay, good. But that's what we do, Monday through Friday. Today is Tuesday. which means it's Code 20 Day. For the second hour, we focus on the threat of Islam. Now, just because we focus on the threat of Islam doesn't mean you have to tune out if you don't believe Islam's a threat. The tactics that we discuss with Steve Klein from Code 20, abolishislam.com, 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 they apply to any enemy. We have a listener, Mr. Donahue, ex-police officer up there in the Pacific Northwest, who his focus is the Catholic Church. Like Steve, Steve's focus is Islam. Mike's focus is Jesuits, all that kind of stuff. And sometimes people get offended when we spend too much time on one. I can't do them all every day. I got people that don't like the Zionists, and I'm like, I can't focus on that. So it's funny, whenever I focus on Islam on Tuesdays, I always get email about it. Why are you not talking about, you know, the evil janitor, you know, coalition that's trying to take over the world? Well, I haven't heard of that one yet, but maybe we'll look into it. We spend most of our time dealing with the median threat, all those that are against liberty. That's our enemy, period. Illuminati, Masons, if they're doing evil against the holy cause of liberty, that's what we talk about. That doesn't, if we don't talk about it every day, that doesn't mean we excuse it. That doesn't mean we don't acknowledge that the papists out there are causing all kinds of problems. And if you listen to the sermons of Pastor Warren Mark Campbell from our church here, the church at kawia.org, and you can get that link on dutchjones.info, dutchjones.info, you'll notice that we hit all of it. We hit all of it. We are just like we're a full gospel church, we're a full enemies of liberty church. We hit everything with a critical eye and analyze it and discuss it. People will say, well, you say Obongo and you're going after all these liberals in Washington. You must be a Republican. No, we're not Republicans here. Hey, Warland, welcome to the show. I don't know who's all in there yet. I haven't looked. Let the janitors work. Yeah. I don't know how to make this work. There we go. But just because I'm not hitting your favorite villain du jour, don't get angry. Don't think you have to send me an 18-paragraph email educating me. I already know this stuff. I was doing reports on the Illuminati in junior high school. Okay? I'm 45. When I was in the 8th grade, I wrote a report on the Illuminati and scared the bejesus out of my speech teacher. She didn't know anything about it. She thought I made it all up because you had to talk about a factual political entity. And I did a story on the Illuminati when I was, 13, 14 years old? In competitive speech in high school, we were dealing with political issues and extemporaneous speech. I was bringing up the New World Order back then before people called it the New World Order. So, you know, I know you're trying to help me, but don't write this big, long, insulting thing like I don't know what I'm talking about. I'm not an expert. I'm a generalist. I say that all the time. But I haven't forgotten about, you know, Opus Dei or the Rosicrucians or all that. I haven't forgotten about any of those people. There are other shows that's all they do. If you listen to that Last Amendment Radio, they have John Eric Phelps and Eric John Phelps. Who's the other guy that's on there? They talk all about that stuff. Vatican assassins, that's great. That's what they specialize in. I'm not knocking them. That's good. You know, I like to sit and listen to that stuff once in a while, too. Maybe I learn stuff. But that's not what this show is about. This show is about solutions. So come to come to our table, sit down, and we understand that you may have a different enemy or be focusing on a different enemy, but the solutions are all the same. Organizing with 3 or 4 families, training regularly, collecting beans, bullets, and bandages, keeping your eyes open, building a communication network, buffeting your body, buffeting your mind, educating yourself in different cell warfare tactics, you know, cooperating with other like-minded cells, and that's it. That's the solution. You know, I could probably get a lot of money donated if I sat here and just bashed on the Catholics or just bashed on the Jews, but that's not what I'm going to do. Or I've had people offer me thousands of dollars to just sit here and take a white supremacist worldview, and I'm not going to do that because, one, I don't believe in that. But I'm not going to just sit on one thing. There are too many other people doing that. And I can only listen to a show like that for so long before I go, oh, I'm not learning anything. I've already heard all this. It's all rehashed. You know, and, but the one thing I don't get into is the space alien lizard people stuff. I'm not saying it's not true. It could be. I don't know. I don't know everything. But it's just not anything I waste my time with on that. So I refrain from getting into the extreme stuff. I enjoy, you know, talking about the Shauna Ford case because I think it has wide-ranging implications as to how they can frame anybody. I enjoy talking about the black helicopter stuff. Today I was getting calls about the helicopters again in California flying nape of the earth, large Chinook helicopters and formations. I got reports of military equipment. And this is the kind of the neat pattern that I'm seeing to move on to the next topic. Chinese-made and marked military vehicles, brand new, heading east on Interstates 10 and 40, and American military equipment heading west on flatbeds, all of it on flatbeds. And when inquiries are made, they say the Chinese stuff's going to White Sands missile testing area. What? I don't think they're going to use it for targets for their brand new Chinese trucks. We must be helping the Chinese with some kind of missile guidance system or something. What I really believe it is that they're pre-positioning equipment here for some kind of takeover when the food riots start. Now, yesterday we alluded to it a little bit about how the governor of California is worried about food riots. And the what was the congresswoman who had the representative last night? Do you remember her name? I forgot her name. Huh?
Yeah, Connie
Conway. Connie Conway sent a representative to our town hall meeting last night. Congresswoman Connie Conway. She's a congresswoman. And she is also worried that if we raise taxes in California that we're going to have riots. She's the Republican minority leader for California. And it was interesting that I talk about that on the radio, and then I go over there and I meet her representative, one of her aides. He came up from her office in Woodlake. Oh, let's see what we got here. Hello, you're live on the air with Dutch. Who do we have?
Ooh, this is Diana. Well, hi, Dutch.
Hello, Diana. I got word that you might be calling in because you had a chance to get some more info. What do you got for us on the Shauna Ford case?
We had a great ride today. We landed in Eloy, but anyway, we were down at the Pima County Courthouse and caught a little bit of the testimony. And I just want to say hi to all your listeners.
Great.
And I hope a lot of people are following the state of Arizona versus Shauna Ford.
Right. Yes, we are. We've even had a couple of our people donate money to her cause, put some money on her books down there at the canteen. So there are people that are taking an active interest.
They must be those socially responsible core conservative Christians.
I would believe so, or maybe they're just they don't like to see a good person get railroaded. It could be as simple as that.
Yeah, well, anyways, I'm going to be real short tonight.
Okay.
I just wanted to say there were two things that happened. Well, actually, there were three things that really stand out in my mind. There was a woman on the stand. I guess she was common law quasi-wife of Owen Oakstar. Owen Oakstar
sure.
is the state star witness who was down there in Aravaca and involved with cartel activity.
Mm-hmm.
And she testified that Mr. Oakstar became state witness because he didn't want to see his son get hurt,
uh-huh.
and also because he didn't want to get a reputation of going to prison and just snitching people out. even though, I mean, this was reported in open court. I mean, you
yeah.
know, the record will show, as they say. Anyway, she was she presented exculpatory evidence that, you know, Oakstar had a personal agenda, and so be it. They also had a friend who lived next door to Albert Gaxiola, actually a neighbor, not a friend, and, you know, a lot of his testimony was challenged by Shauna's attorney, Eric Larson. It seems that things that he said very early on, when it was fresh in his mind and memory, have somewhat changed. So, anyways, on cross-examination, they proved that what he was saying now is not what he said before.
Ah, good. How did the jury react to that, or are they just stone-faced?
Yeah, and the thing that really bothered me, because I've been there a couple of times now, Dutch, and I'm getting tired. I'm getting tedious of all this testimony of coming in, of all these different witnesses, and all they say is they saw a woman. They saw a woman with a wig. They saw a woman with red hair. Today it was red hair. Saw a woman standing from just the shoulders from the waist up, dorsal side. I'm just getting tired of the testimony. No one has ever said they saw Shauna Ford, ever.
That's right.
Ever.
That's
at
right.
any time. But they give vivid descriptions of all these other women, here, there, everywhere. So that just really annoyed me. I mean, can you understand that comment?
Yes, yeah. Well, I mean, it's like, it's almost to the point of, like, why are we even going through this when your witnesses are crumbling on the stand? Turn
that
down a little bit.
Thank you. Thank you. Why are we listening to this babble? Right? Anyway, the third witness they put on today, he was a Colorado Minuteman.
Right.
And, you know, it's really funny. He testified how an earlier Colorado Minuteman had made a comment that we never get our pictures taken, and yet they showed the jury today how this Colorado Minuteman posed full picture with Shauna Ford that he met at a truck stop, and it's like, you know, wait a minute.
Yeah.
You guys made it a big, you know, a big statement last week. We don't do pictures. And yet, here's a picture of you with Shauna Ford at a truck stop together. I don't get this.
Yeah, exactly. Well, it just goes to show that in that world, there's a lot of, egos at work there. And a lot of people who wish they were real militia types.
Yeah.
And they don't really practice good security, you know, OPSEC stuff. They don't know how to keep their mouth shut.
You know, it was funny. Today there were some comments made that just floated by Eric Larson.
He didn't object.
He mentioned about, he talked about the American cartel. Now, that was an opportunity. Who is the American cartel?
Yeah, that opened the door.
He made the comment that Shauna was not following the chain of command and listening to the higher-ups. Well, that one just sailed by. Nobody questioned.
Who were the higher-ups? Yeah. Yeah, I mean, it sounds like just stuff I learned in high school, I would have objected to that just from doing, you know, mock trial stuff.
It was really lame today. Really lame. And then they broke for recess and said, that's all today, folks. And Thursday they said they have somebody coming in from out of town. And that's going to be the wind-up. Thursday's
so
the day. So we'll stay tuned for more.
Well, what's the countenance of the countenance of the jury? I mean, are they looking tired? Are they looking interested?
Well,
because Shauna's saying she feels good about the jury, and I'm kind of wondering what vibe they're giving off that would make her say that.
Well, all I can say is there was nothing, no one, there is no eyewitness testimony anywhere that even links Shauna Ford to the crime.
Right.
That's my bottom line, and like I said, it's starting to get really tedious. Listening to these witnesses that all they do is contradict what they said on earlier statements. That's it.
Sounds to me like a lot of paid informants ended up spending their initial payment and aren't remembering what the prosecution handlers told them to say, is what it sounds like.
Yeah, well,
it sounds like their case is falling apart down there. Whoever the FBI or whoever was, you know, grooming these so-called witnesses, they're, you know,
so,
somebody's going to be in trouble
I'll
in the prosecutor's department.
If it wasn't for Lane and her people, there would be no truth reported in this whole case.
Right.
Because the media was so negative. Just this weekend, some gal in the Washington Post reported that the Arivaca crime came down after rancher Bob Krentz was murdered. Yeah. Was she trying to make a connection?
Yeah, that was loose.
She reported that Lane busted into open court, defying a judge's order. Well, that one wasn't true either. This is the type of stuff the media is creating.
Well, the media is state media, and it prints what it's told to print. I wouldn't be surprised if people from the DA's office are just hand-feeding them stories, and they're just putting their names on them.
Anyway, it's good to hear your voice, Dutch.
Thank you.
And take care, and keep the truth going, Dutch.
Well, we will keep putting it out there, and of course we're praying for Shauna to be exonerated in this. And that, you know, that, because the more I study it, the more it just sounds like a sham job, that they're just trying to put somebody away to make an example of them, and it blew up in their face because their own witnesses can't even keep their story straight.
It's a railroading second to none.
Yep. Yes, yes, yes. Well, thank you for calling in, and let us know after tomorrow. And then when this goes to the jury, you know, we'll be watching it closely to see when they come back with a decision.
Love you, Dutch.
Thank
love
you.
Love your show.
Thank you very much. Call again.
Bye.
Bye-bye. Okay. Yeah, so that's... it's. I was reading a bunch of stuff on yesterday's events, not today's events. As I do in the morning when I get up, I just Google Shauna Ford, and then I pull up all the news articles. And every one of the witnesses that the state has brought forth has just been a bumbling idiot on the stand. They can't ID her, they can't point her out in the courtroom, that kind of stuff. I like the, if that today they said she had red hair now. So we're just praying that the jury understands this, that they didn't just get a bunch of idiot zombies. I don't know the makeup of the jury, but this jury, I just pray that they have an IQ of at least 100 so they can go, hey, wait a minute, shadow of a doubt. That we're in a capital murder case here. This woman is defending her life. And the witnesses can't even point her out, you know. And the people that are pointing to her are the people that may have pulled the trigger. What are they trying to do? You know, I don't know. And their witnesses are getting deals so that they don't. The one guy from, I can't remember his name now. There's one witness against her that was a parole violator. And they let him, they smoothed over his parole violation if he testified. Well, then he went out and broke his parole again. So now he's in jail again. Names don't matter. Who cares about the names? It's the same characters they always drum up in these conspiracies to try and railroad Americans. It's like everything else. If they can do it to one of us, they can do it to all of us. So thank you, Diane, for that that update on the Shauna Ford trial. Remember, freeshaunaford.com, right, Lou? Mm-hmm. Freeshaunaford.com. Justice for Shauna. Ford.com. And remember, Ford is F-O-R-D-E. Just go to DutchJones.info, and there's a link right at the top of the page. And I've received emails that two or three of you have donated a few dollars to her so that she can have money on in her, I guess, the prison PX or whatever it is she has. So thank you very much for that. I really appreciate that. Let's go to break early right now, Lou, since I'm going to switch topics here in a minute, and you should always be ready to play something, Lou. You ready? Here we go. We'll be back after the break. Remember, during the break, take a look at our website. We need your financial support. Nobody's donated. We're $53 and change short on paying the electric bill, and we need it immediately. The electricity gets turned off. I'm not going to pedal a bike to make this thing work. So we'll talk to you after the break. Remember those thoughts.
Every man must stand behind the men behind the wire. Little streets of Belfast in the dark of early morn. British soldiers came running, breaking little homes away scorn. Hear the sobs of crying children, dragging fathers from their bed. Watch the scene as helpless mothers, watch the blood fall from their heads. Armored cars and tanks and guns came to take away our sons. But every man must stand behind the men behind the wire. Armored cars and tanks and guns came to take away our sons. But every man must stand behind the men behind the wire.
Not for them a judge or jury, or indeed a crime at all. Being Irish means they're guilty, so they're guilty one and all. Round the world, a truth will echo. Cromwell's men are here again. England's name again is sullied in the eyes of honest men. Armored cars and tanks and guns came to take away our sons. But every man must stand behind the men behind the wire. Armored cars and tanks and guns came to take away our sons. But every man must stand behind the men behind the wire. Proudly march behind our banner, proudly march behind our men. We will have them free to help us build a nation once again. On the people, stem together, proudly march on your way. Never fear or never falter, till the boys come home to stay. Armored cars and tanks and guns came to take away our sons. But every man must stand behind the men behind the wire. Armored cars and tanks and guns came to take away our sons. But every man must stand behind the men behind the wire.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info. Okay, we're back. Oh, I like this one. What's this one called, Lou? Cruising Along. How long is it? Wow, 60 minutes. 60-minute song? 60-second song. We got some new bumper music I'm trying to work into the groove here to give you people a feel like I'm a pro. I'm trying to get more radio stations to pick us up, so I'm trying to make it a little more professional, because if we don't get more listeners, we won't get more people paying in. We won't be able to keep doing it, so I'm trying to package it a little better without changing the message, if you know what that means. I don't want to change the message, but I'll definitely put some nice bookends on it. This is the Dutch Jones radio program, and we're here. It is the 8th of February. It's a Tuesday, 2011. It's about 5:28 p.m. The phone number to call in.
Go to a break again.
No, let's not go to a break again, Lou. That would be, you're just break crazy, aren't you? You're crazy about them breaks. Lou wants to go to a break again because he likes the music.
That's
4:28. Yeah, we should go to. This is normally when we take our break, but that's just the way it goes. I just figured, you know, transitioning from our call-in. The call-in number right now is 559-561-8225. 559-561-8225. I see that, who is this? Bob from Georgia called before I got in the studio. I hope you're listening, Bob. Thank you. We don't have a message machine on that, but the young lady who, for a few more days, lives in here, answered the phone. And remember, DutchJones.info, DutchJones.info, Dutch at DutchJones.info. What?
How do you make your words different colors?
I don't know. You have to ask Lou how to make your words different colors.
Because I'm a monitor.
Hey, Minuteman V. Minuteman V. Welcome, welcome, welcome. You missed the best half hour of radio. It's I can't, and we didn't record it. It'll never be produced. It was awesome. Davy Crockett called from the dead. It was a wonderful time. I don't know. I just threw that name out there. I don't know who would do that. What I was talking about before we got that courtroom update for Shauna, which I appreciate. Feel free to, anybody that's got breaking news or something that is of interest to us, feel free to call. You don't have to worry. But we're an open forum topic here. Show. We're current event driven, yes, but it's okay if somebody's got something. You see helicopters landing in a football field and a bunch of Chinese troops getting out, please, by all means, shoot first, then call in, or call in while you're shooting. But don't be afraid to call
shooting
in with
pictures,
things easy.
That is. Shooting pictures.
No, not if it's Chinese troops landing. We won't be shooting pictures. If it's Red Dawn,
what if it's
part
a picture
de,
gun?
Huh?
A picture gun. One
shoot.
Of those camera guns.
A camera gun?
Yeah, like on the.
Are you taking cough syrup again, Lou?
Not like we've seen.
Have you been drinking the scope straight out of the bottle and not gargling?
No, like on the
allergy.
You got to speak into the mic, not to me.
Like I'm the deadliest warrior.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Yeah, you do.
I have no idea what you're talking
yeah, you
about.
Do.
No, I don't.
Yeah, you do.
Picture guns on the deadliest warrior.
The camera gun.
What's a camera gun?
Shooting a camera gun?
No. You take a picture and the bullet comes out.
You take a picture. Oh, you're talking about the undercover, you know, covert put a pistol in a camera. You're talking about the Russians putting it in the high 8 film cameras or super 8 film cameras.
And then you're shooting them. Get it?
Yeah, I get it, Lou. You watch way too much television.
No, you watch it too.
Yeah, but I don't sit here and try to make a joke out of it.
Sure.
That's the sad thing. And you should be talking into the microphone, not to me. Oh, your head goes over here. Now say hello, Lou. Say hello, Lou.
Hello.
I'm going to use pressure points. Ow. Say hello.
Hello, Lou.
Thank you. There's a reason the mic's over there. I don't want to look at you when you talk to me. This is professional radio. I don't need to look at you. So, anyway, that's what the Dutch Jones Show is about, abusing Lou. If you guys are on Facebook, take a look at some of the jib-jab things I did with Lou's head. You can go to our Facebook page. We do have a Facebook presence. If you want to add me, just add me. I add everybody, and then I check them out. If they turn out to be a scum-sucking Nazi, scumminist, left-wing liberal hippie, then I send them some hate mail, and I delete them. And then they get all mad at me. They get really mad. It's funny when I delete people, especially the Nazis. I stayed up late last night for some reason, and I kept fighting with these Nazis all night. They kept calling themselves National Socialists. I kept saying, you're a Nazi. You know, you can change, you can polish a turd, but it's still going to be a turd. And that's the way I look at Nazis and that whole thing. So if you're a Nazi and you're listening to this, I want you to go out in your garage, get a hammer, and hit yourself in the head, because you're not supposed to listen to this show.
They complained about communists instead of socialists.
Yeah, there's Fabian socialists who complain about the communists. I'm like, you're both just sides of the same evil coin. So it's not really, it's funny. They think they can be my friend if they complain about the scumminess. I'm like, but you're a scumminess too, you Nazi scumbag. I've yet to meet a Nazi, honestly, a guy that was a full-on Nazi that on his own could defend himself, both verbally or physically. On his own, could compute any original thought. On his own, could defend his basic beliefs in a fair venue. They have to do it loud, screaming, overwhelming power, and that to me tells me that their argument is wrong. The things that you can discuss and debate level-headed, then you know that there's some basis in truth of them. You know, but you just it's not worth it. I'm not going to reach out to those people anymore. I spent 2 years talking to them, and I got a pretty good idea where they're coming from, and they're coming from the pit of hell. They're liars. And most of them are some kind of deviant variant of some horrible, horrible sin that they're trying to cover up for. And that's why they're doing what they're doing, because they want to be in control so they can do whatever they want. Megalomaniac is the term that comes to mind. And that's why I want nothing to do with them. Tyranny is tyranny is tyranny. I don't, you know, these people want to package it some other way. A couple things that occurred today. We got a news release for Michelle Obama that went out over the AP that, guess what? Obongo quit smoking.
Yeah, right.
Michelle's butt's getting bigger, but Obongo quit smoking. And it's funny that she's trying to shove all this health and diet and make all these mandatory health laws for the United States, for our children, for our soldiers, and for civilians. And her own family, you know, she doesn't look like she's eating the most healthiest of foods. The picture they showed of her today, if it was current, was ridiculous. And I thought of something. You know, you got Obongo in the White House. He smokes. I was trying to think. You had FDR who smoked, and he was a cripple, and they hid that from us. They hid that he was actually a cripple. They did all kinds of things to cover up his polio. So it's kind of funny. People like to compare him to FDR because of the state of the nation and everything, which is true. But the difference is that FDR was a cripple, and Obongo is crippling our country. So there's a slight difference there. They're both communists, and as far as I know, FDR was not a closet Muslim. And then now they're comparing him to Ronald Reagan, Obongo, and some people today were comparing him to JFK, John F. Kennedy. And it's funny, as much as, you know, Kennedy was a Democrat, he's a right-wing conservative compared to the Democrats today. Not that I like the party stuff, but Obongo is an extreme, you know, Fabian socialist. And he's done nothing that is a comparison to either, you know, and I'm not a big fan of Reagan's either. Don't get me wrong. I don't like Reagan either. The guy that brought us Iran-Contra, all kinds of stuff that just not good stuff. But they're grabbing at straws. He's running for re-election already. And they're manipulating everything in the media. They're manipulating unemployment. They're manipulating how much we owe. They're manipulating the bond markets and everything like that. And he's trying to say he's working out trade deals and all this kind of stuff. He's got nothing positive. Even his own people are going, take it for weapons. He's done nothing that he promised to do. He ran at the state level in Illinois as a fervent anti-gunner. He gets in and he doesn't do anything for it. He ran at the state level as a friend of the faggots. He gets in. He's kind of dragging his feet on, you know, marriage and the military. He ran as an anti-war beatnik who was going to pull all the troops out of the Middle East, and he's not really doing that either. So he's not even achieving what he said he's going to do. So that tells me that he's not an either-or candidate. He's simply serving the New World Order, whoever, you know, whoever his puppet master is. And he just keeps doing what he wants to do. What he's told to do, to destroy the country. That's his whole mission, is to destroy the country, not to appease the Democrats. Which is funny, because they're gonna vote for him again in the next election. I don't know if he'll be reelected. I don't know if they'll run Hillary or what. I really don't know. But he's not pleasing anybody. I mean, you know, there's no consensus under Obongo. And it's just something really creepy that I've been watching, that I see that he's not doing anything. He's not doing any good anywhere. You've got, from our town hall meeting last night, you know, we had a Democrat and a Republican show up to say, you know, what's the state of the, you know, what's going on with the economy and everything. And the funny part was, you know, the person from the state level said, you know, we're in big trouble financially. There's no way we can pay for what we're paying for. We've got to raise taxes. And then the Republican came out and said, there's no way we can raise taxes. We've got to cut. And then there were several initiatives in California. And forgive me, I don't know all the bill, but there was one on diesel trucks that says that all diesel trucks have to reach a certain minimum level or maximum level of emissions. And they had a deadline of this past January 1st. Well, is another one of those unthinkable mandates where the government at the time came up with this great plan, but the technology didn't match it. There's not any technology that you could reach those standards. And there wasn't enough money in the trucking industry to replace their trucks, so they keep extending it. Well, this hippie liberal hag is like, well, I think that this is just terrible. We've got to get this compliance underway. We've got to, and then this guy says, you do understand that because we're doing this, the trucking business is leaving California, which means the tax base is diminished. Well, that's good, because we don't want those trucks here. Well, the trucks are still driving here. They're just not paying taxes here at the level they were, because the business moved out. Now, they still have to pay a tax usage when they go through the scales and all that. I understand that. But the bulk of the business tax is gone in Nevada or Arizona because of this stupid bill. And she's like, well, this is just terrible. Where's the money going? We're supposed to get everyone out of their cars, and we're not. And this we have a highway, interstate. Is it a highway? State highway? It's a four-lane highway, 99, that goes north and south through the valley. Heavily traveled. She goes, there's too much transient traffic. We have to stop those cars from coming through our county. And I'm just thinking, these are the same people that want to tax everybody so they can pay for everything, but yet they don't want them to do business. They don't want them to recreate in our community. They don't want them to travel and buy gas and goods here. The entire Fabian socialist thought pattern, from Obongo down to this hippie in our meeting, is a flawed system. Stifle growth, stifle productivity, but yet demand the same amount of taxation from everyone. It doesn't make sense. Everybody wants to raise taxes on a depressed economy. And then they want to take away the tools that cause economies to grow, which would be shipping, transportation. And, of course, they talked about, well, let's get trains, let's get buses, let's do all this. And nobody's going to take them. Nobody's. It's just insane. And then what was funny is there was a personal thing, and I loved it. I made a hippie mad. I didn't even have to say anything, because it was something I did last year. early last year, they had it. They said, hey, the county's got these, I don't even know what they're called. There's some tax fund where they get so much money per year to redo the roads in the county. And literally, they can only do about a half mile of road resurfacing per urban community. So they said, well, we need to find out which ones are important. Well, of course, all the rich hippie folks on a place called Skyline Drive, which is a one-way in, one-way out road. There's no commerce on it. You don't see tourists going up there. It's just them driving home. They want their road resurfaced. Well, they said, anybody who wants to have input on which roads get resurfaced, please be at this rendezvous point at 8 a.m. on this day. It was the pastor. It was me. It was two other people from the church that showed up. Nobody else showed up from the community. So guess who got to decide which roads got paved? That's right, the four of us. So we went out with the head of the county roads maintenance guy, and we went around. We looked at all the roads on the list that have been suggested, including this really nice road that went through really nice homes on Skyline Drive. And we're like, well, what's the usage? How many vehicles per day go through here? How many per year? And we were amazed to find out, because they put down counters. And we get thousands of people on our road in the summer. We didn't know it. So we sat down and we looked at each other, and I said, my idea is any road that is utilized by tourism. We want to make the tourists happy to be here. We want to make the tourists... is that still up? Can you turn that down? I'm getting an echo in my head. Yeah, thank you. And we want the tourists to come here and spend the money so the tax burden goes to them, because we found out that the bed tax, which is a resort-type tax, we here in our little community of 6,000 people make up over two-thirds of the county's budget through that bed tax. So most of the money is coming from the tourists. So I thought, let's fix their roads. So we probably, the road by the hotels, the road by the supermarket, this, that, and there were three roads, and they fixed them. Got the potholes out, made them look really nice. And these people, well, how come last year they didn't pave my road and this? He says, and it was funny, the guy goes, well, DJ, the pastor, the clockies, they were the only ones that showed up for our little meeting. And I announced the meeting here. And I'm thinking, yeah, because I raised my hand because he pointed to us. And yeah, there's DJ in the back there. And I'm the one that wrote up the proposal that went to the county, because I have a little bit of experience doing that, working for, you know, a civil servant slug. So it was great. She's like, well, all I know, how did she word it, Lou? I can't say that the road is damaging my car, but I know it is. How'd she say it? Yeah, say it. No, say it in the mic. The way I said it, she goes, I can't prove that the road
I'm
is...
I'm not sure if it is, but I'm pretty sure it is.
Yeah, and I'm like, what a stupid thing to say. What a completely stupid thing to say. So these little NIMBY hippies, you know, these are the same people who want to put speed bumps and stop signs and traffic cameras up all over here. But when they heard that we pay almost up to two-thirds of the county's taxes, and then somebody says, well, where does all that money go? And he goes, police and fire. That bed tax goes to cover police and fire, which is funny because we don't have a full-time fireman, we don't have a fire department, we don't have a full-time law enforcement up here. But yet we're paying for everybody else's up here. Not me. I mean, I don't own an inn. I don't rent my room out to anybody. And if I did, I wouldn't charge them the tax. But it's these little things at the local level that show you where exactly the system is flawed. You know, everybody wanted all, like, the shuttle service that goes to the park stopped running because there wasn't enough money for it. So they offered alternative transportation for everybody, and guess what? Nobody took it. People want to drive their own car into the park. That's what they want to do. You know, and people don't want to have to get on a bus with a bunch of sweaty tourists from Istanbul while they go look at the big trees. They want to drive their own cars in, so they cancel the service over the winter. They're going to bring it back up for holidays and stuff. But everybody's like, well, we need more bike paths. Remember that? We need more bike paths. And I'm like, where are you going to bike? We live in a mountainous community. There's only a few roads. You know, you can't force people to ride bikes. You can't force people to take public transportation. One of the big things here is they announced that they're not going to have any more fairs or carnivals. There's just not enough money. And, of course, guess what? Everybody's upset about that. Everybody wants more money to have fairs and carnivals because it brings money in. And then the last thing that I noticed there that was pretty funny, they announced that the development of a new film bureau, they're going to pay this guy to try and get movie companies to come here and make films. And like Stacy said, why couldn't they just put up a website and somebody, some student could do it for free. I mean, what is this basically? A guy who's going to sit in a room, call all the film industries, schmooze them, you know, the businesses, and say, look, you can come here because we're not going to charge for a permit. But they said that they filmed the parts of the last version of the Hulk here, and it brought in $250,000 in raw revenue to the restaurants and hotels and stuff like that. I mean, that's a good thing. I think that's a good thing. But why do you pay a civil service slug to do that? That sounds like something that each community could get volunteers to do. Sounds like something you could do with YouTube and a web page, showing how beautiful your community is, showing them the scenes and things that a movie might want as a backdrop, as a location shoot. But they're actually paying a guy at the county level to do this? It's ridiculous to me. You know, this same guy got paid last year to take extreme sports riders like mountain bikers, kayakers, all that. He took them all around the county, showing them all the great places to go so they'd write articles about us. Talk about payola. Why not just write them a letter and say, hey, you need to go home and write a story on this. But yet they had bus tours, they went hiking with them, they went, you know, and it's strange to me. Hello, Scotty, finally checking in. I hope have you been transmitting? Because, you know, people need to hear my voice or they go through withdrawal. They Jones for the Jones Show. But if my county is doing this, you can darn well bet that your county is doing this kind of stupid stuff. And then the last thing they said was, if we don't get any more people to join the committee for Three Rivers, we're going to have to shut down these meetings. I'm like, good. We don't need to be having these meetings. We don't need more organization in government. One of the things they talk about in these meetings is turning people in for cutting down their own trees. And I don't want to do that. See, what's Moreland saying? Chico used to have a beautiful city center park, but now the scummiests have destroyed it. Yeah, I remember in the city of Riverside, White's Park, right downtown, right next to the federal building, actually, where the FBI and ATF were. They had to put a big chain-link fence all around it because all the sodomites, scummiests, homeless were in there doing drugs. And they shut it down for 3 years because they couldn't keep it clean and safe. They couldn't keep the needles out of the playground. But nobody wanted to go in and arrest these people. Oh, they got no place to go. So you're letting faggots meet each other in the middle of the night and have sex in the playground stuff, right? So instead they shut it down for everybody for 3 years and hope that it would get off the internet that was a great place to go find drugs and sodomite encounters. When I left, I think it was still fenced off. I don't know if they ever tore the fence down. But this is the way that civil government answers problems. Rather than enforcing what's on the law, they do weird stuff that penalizes everybody. So my point is, and I do have one, that the local link is still the most important. By us going to this meeting, the pastor asking some great questions, he asked about the ammo law to the, what was her name, Connie Conyers rep? Said, what's up with that bill? He goes, is it gone? And the guy says, no, they're going to take this all the way to the Supreme Court. The liberals are going to do it. They want to take away our ammo. That was, you know, unfortunately. I knew that. And I'm sure everybody out there listening to this that, you know, it was a victory in the battle, but not for the war.
I thought he said it was going to be a lot worse than what it was.
Yeah, the new law is going to be a lot worse. They're going to try to restrict even more. So, but
disgusting.
And it's a great place to rub elbows with these people and get their ear. And if you think it doesn't matter, you're wrong. When you go up to him and tell him, like, I went up to one of the reps. I think I went to the Democratic one, and I said, look. Because he said, if you have any problems with AT&T. And I said, AT&T won't provide us internet. He's like, well, here's my card. Give me a call. And I'm going to do it this week. Has John Lyon been on? I don't know who John Lyon is. Nobody's been here by that name. Border Guardian, welcome. We continue to go to these meetings as long as they're going to have them, but we don't support the fact that they're having them because the goal of this meeting is to incorporate the city of Three Rivers and absorb Cahuilla. Therefore, we would lose our identity. We also found out last night that the new census that's coming out totally jacked up urban communities. Unincorporated urban communities are going to lose hundreds of thousands of dollars because what they do now under the new census laws is they throw you in with the nearest incorporated population and your funding goes to them. Hello, this is Dutch.
I'm John Lyon.
Oh, okay. And what did you want to talk about, John?
I wanted to talk about Sean of Florida. I was listening to your conversation about taxes and roads and local stuff.
Sure.
And I just wanted to wait for a more opportunity. tune time.
Oh, no, that's fine. You can call him. We got a few minutes left before we switch over to Liberty. Can you turn down the feed in the background? I can hear it. And it's messing me up.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, it's kind of throwing me off there. Well, listen, I'm the spokesman for the Committee for Justice for Shauna Ford, and I went today to a hearing in Tucson for Shauna's case. She's charged with double murder in Arivaca in 2009. And I just wanted to let people know that this case is approaching its end. I think it's scheduled to go to the jury at the end of this week. Closing arguments will be Thursday.
Okay.
I got a chance to hear a few witnesses. It was one of the key witnesses in the case is a man named Owen Oakstar, is one of the prosecution's key witnesses. His former wife testified that she felt he was an alcoholic, a drug abuser, and generally speaking, not a very truthful person.
Mm-hmm.
So what she had to say did not reflect well on one of the prosecution's witnesses. Then there was another fellow member named Easter, who was a neighbor of one of the conspirators accused of being involved in the attack.
Okay.
He testified that he had told police after shortly after the event, that the woman that he saw getting out of the van at a critical place at a critical time was absolutely not Shauna Ford.
Oh, that's excellent.
Didn't know who it was, and he was trying to backpedal, and say, well, I don't really know, but the fact is the transcript is right in front of him, and the defense attorney, Eric Larson, had him read it. And he said, they asked him what, was it this person that showed him a picture of Shauna Ford? And he said, absolutely not.
Great.
So that was what he said at the time. Then there was another fellow, I can't remember his name, but he was the head of the Colorado Minuteman. Copley, I can't quite remember his name. But
that's okay.
He was not a prosecution witness, and I can understand why. First of all, he testified that he had told police that he felt that Shauna was a blowhard, a lot of hot air, very braggadocious. In other words, that, you know, things that people said, oh, yeah, I heard her say this, I heard her say that. Well, you know, she's someone who says a lot of stuff that didn't have much merit to it, and that got into the record. And also, he alleged that Shauna and he had discussed an operation to attack what they call a drug stash house.
Yeah, I read that the day before that they thought that's what he was going to testify to.
And he did, but the thing is, it was a drug stash house and not a residence. There was no talk of killing anybody.
Yeah.
And the plan was to do this in September of 2009.
Did he also testify that he thought that she was, that Shauna was an FBI agitator and was just trying to get him in trouble?
No word at all to that effect. He testified that he had worked for the FBI. Referred to them as the agency for some reason. I thought when he said that he was talking about the CIA.
Yeah, spy novel fan, probably.
Yeah, the Federal Agency of Investigation. I didn't get that. He seemed very confused. Eric Larson had to bring him back again and again and again to the transcript of his deposition to prosecutors and defense lawyers and to the statement he gave police, and he said he didn't remember, said he didn't hear, he was very hard of hearing, he was hard to communicate with him, and he was just very mixed up about what he recalled now and what he had said to police, you know, shortly after the event. So it was you know, very, very hard to put much credence in what he said, and what he did say included the fact that this was supposed to be an attack on a drug stash house, not a residence.
Right.
And that there was no talk of any homicidal plans.
Yeah.
And that it was supposed to happen in September. So if the jury wants to ignore all those little inconsistencies or those things that don't quite match up to the events, then I guess they can, but...
Yeah.
The point is that he was an FBI informant.
Yeah, this is the guy. He calls himself Raven, but I don't have his name in front of me. That was like
they had code names. They talked about this and that, and had Dan Dan and Jim, and different kinds of handles like that. So he was definitely a little not something that I was used to. It's almost like you're on the internet or something, using handles instead of your real name.
Yeah, a lot of the Minutemen do that for radio call signs, and I looked him up, and he's all over the internet. And I, for some reason, like you, I can't remember his name, but I was reading the stuff this morning. And they thought he was going to testify to the fact that he thought he was being set up. And I thought, well, if he thought that, why didn't he go to the authorities? If he thought somebody was really going to do this event, if he thought Shauna was somebody who was capable of it, because on one hand, he's saying she's just a blowhard, she's not really going to do anything, but then he's testifying that, you know, this other stuff. It just doesn't make any sense. He's not a very credible witness for the prosecution.
I think his name was Copley. I'm just trying to remember.
Yeah, Robert Copley.
That sounds right. And yeah. The thing is that he was so out of it in terms of even there was a point where Eric Larson had to read something to him because he couldn't get him to find it in the transcript. He was just too confused.
Yeah, his code name was Anglo, by the way. That's what his was, okay. Anglo, you know, which is so strange.
I just want to let people know that this is a trial that seems to be based on a lot of hearsay, a lot of very, very weak, accounts, verbal accounts. Very, very little that actually said nothing that directly ties her to the crime scene. And in fact, I think the case is so weak, I'm surprised the judge didn't dismiss it a long time ago.
Yeah.
There needs to be some evidence. So they appear to have some DNA evidence against some of these other two defendants that are going to have their trials later, but when it came to DNA evidence pertaining to Shauna, they had one ring that they had swabbed, and they found something that could have been Shauna's, and it's also one in a thousand Hispanic persons would also match that DNA.
Hmm.
1 in 2,000 Anglos would match the DNA. And the standard, the expert who was testifying said that the standard that they use for certainty is that they have a 1 in 260 billion chance that it could have been somebody else.
Sure, reasonable doubt is well within that.
So 1 in 1,000, that isn't even close.
Not even.
They ought to be embarrassed to have presented that. It's not evidence. I would be very, if I were on that jury, I would be very frustrated. They were making me take time out of my life and pay close attention, and then the evidence they present is garbage.
Well, that's with this entire package that they brought against her to even get a warrant for her arrest. I don't think anywhere else it would have flown except in Dupnik's little kingdom down there.
Well, you may have a point, and it is, I think, the case primarily of guilt by association.
Yeah, and
guilt by presumption.
And if some weird chance that she is found guilty in this, that the jury has gotten to or doesn't understand what it's supposed to be doing, then we know that it's a setup, and that we need to be screaming loudly about it. Well, thank you for calling in, Mr. Lyon, and we're going to go to a break here. And call in anytime you like.
I will, thank you.
Thank you, sir, for your time. We appreciate the effort. That's good, getting another voice on the Shauna Ford issue there. Well, we're coming up for the break here. It's time to switch over to Liberty Tree Radio with our thousands of listeners over there, our sister station, and we enjoy doing that. And it's going to be Code 20. It's Tuesday. We're going to be talking about the Islamo-fascist threat to the world and some of the weird stuff that's been going on in the news over in Egypt and Afghanistan, where Christian Red Cross workers is going to be put to death because he refuses to convert back to Islam. And just great stuff with Steve Klein. So I want you to stick around, and hopefully we won't have the problems that we had yesterday with the computers, and we can be on Liberty Tree Radio. But if we're not, we'll stay right here on Stronghold Radio, coming to you from Kauai. We'll be back right after the break. Because our liberty is not the same. Our Constitution doesn't give Congress power to rule. We shouldn't fear government tyranny's for fools. Amendment 1, Section 8, healthcare's not the best to regulate. It's where you know you shouldn't tread. Nah, you shouldn't be treading there. You left us with no choice. It's time for us to act. You're stealing our future, our freedom's under attack. Americans uniting, fighting back in 2010. Remember Massachusetts, we're in this fight to win. We'll just vote all y'all out. Oh, you tax the hard-earned money to buy the votes you need. Cash
flow, just so votes are guaranteed. Ignoring your constituents, now we're mad as hell. We're fighting back with ballots, cause our liberty is not for sale. Seen in Massachusetts, Virginia, and Jersey too. Ignore we the people come November, you're through. Hey Congress, can you hear us now? Yeah, you tax the hard-earned money to buy the votes you need. Cash for float, just so votes are guaranteed. Ignoring your constituents, now we're mad as hell. We're fighting back with ballots, cause our liberty is not for sale, not on our watch.
When the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info.
There is rebellion in the wind.
A new world order. A new world order.
How can you have a house without a gun?
Guns aren't toys. They're for family protection, hunting dangerous or delicious animals, keeping the King of England out of your face.
Government is not the solution to our problem. Government is the problem. Is the problem.
Here's a hint for you geniuses out there.
Avenge me!
It's all for nothing if you don't have freedom.
It's all that cheese they eat. Seems like every other day somebody's rolling a 50-pound cheese wheel.
Put out all points bulletin. We'll set up roadblocks everywhere.
A new world order. A new world order. A new world order.
Attention! Attention!
I'm not going to stand for this. I'm going to call the newspapers, the TV stations, the gas stations, everybody.
Heavens, what kind of radio show is this?
Sit back down and shut your trap. It's time for
Dutch Jones, Dutch Jones
radio program.
And now for something completely different.
Well, being it's Tuesday, February 8th, it is not the Dutch Jones radio program, but instead it's time for Code 20 with Steve Klein, who is our resident focused on Islam person. He doesn't like it when you call him an expert, so it's a field of interest. Experts always get ridiculed. People have a field of interest. They tend to be listened to and not nagged. So are you there, Steve?
I'm here. Glad to be on the show. Hey, we got a giant outreach against the Muslim Brotherhood and Islam in general this Sunday, so we can talk a lot about that. It's going crazy, baby.
Oh, that'll be excellent. And of course, all that stuff going on. Did you hear about the Red Cross operator over there in Afghanistan that's being held in prison? He's going to be killed if he doesn't convert back to Islam.
That's the guy who got his leg blown off like 12 years ago or so. He converted to Christianity,
yep.
And they're going to hang him, right?
Yep, and they got some word out that they're sodomizing him as punishment.
Well, that's what they do. I know it's hard for people to believe. I have an article, in fact, from one of the Middle East, I think it was Afghanistan, where a little girl was raped by her cousin. She's 14 years old. So they brought her before the leader of the mosque, and he said, okay, 100 lashes because you were raped by your older cousin. He was 40. She was 14. She died.
Mm-hmm.
She died. She was beaten to death. And the poor little thing was raped by her older cousin. And a lot of people don't realize it, but sodomy is huge in Islam.
Is.
When it says the 72 virgins, it also says boys, and in Afghanistan, they have these little boys, I never can say their name right, but like Baka Bushi boys, they're prepubescent, they're bought and sold by the Afghani Muslims, and they're queers for the queer men. It's bizarre. And queerdom, I think I told you on one show, is I had to translate from guy translated from Arabic to what he thought was English, and then he gave it to me, and it was all about homosexuality running rampant at the senior levels of Egypt amongst the Egyptian muftis and imams and all those sick dudes that they should be shot anyhow. It's a loving thing to do.
Yes, yes, yes. It's weird because I've seen the videos where you see him holding hands with other men and everything, yeah. And you know, he says, well, you know, the head of Iran came up and said there are no homosexuals in Iran. Well, no, there are no homosexuals because they have a different word for it. You know,
yeah,
it's
exactly.
Flexibility
yeah,
of convenience. Yeah, yeah. But, yeah, I saw that, and I was just furious that the regular media is not covering it. They're going to kill this Red Cross worker. He says he would rather die and take the punishment than deny his Lord and Savior Jesus Christ. And I'm thinking, what strength and power are in his words that we as Americans, most American Christians, don't even get a glimpse of?
Exactly.
They don't even understand it.
Exactly.
You know. Yeah.
So anyways, March 12th, we got a big training session going on at the Church of Kalia. Dutch and his team are going to be joined by Sergeant R, and another sergeant will be there. Not that we need him, but the more, the better,
oh,
right?
Yeah. Yeah, the more input we get, the better.
Yeah, Sergeant R's little brother, he's 15 years old. He's on the verge of becoming a professional cage fighter, and the kid is awesome. He's only 135 pounds. He's had five major fights. He's won them all by knockout. The kid's great, and so he'll be a great asset along with Lewis when we have Larry Wick come down. But
yeah, it's going to
be good. March 12th, go ahead and... let's talk about March 12th. I'm going to let you talk
about March 12th. Sure, March 12th. We're going to do it the same way we did it the last, it would have been the, I can't remember what date the last one was. But that Saturday, we're going to break the group up into two groups. We're going to have the first and second group. I think we called them Alpha and Zed or something.
Alpha and Zulu.
And in the first part of the morning, one crew is going to be in learning cell warfare and a little bit of the threat of Islam. They'll learn the next stage of it, of SMEAC. And then while they're doing that, we'll have the other half of the group on the field teaching them introductory to pistol craft and safety, and then a little bit on the law here in California specifically, because we don't know the law in all 50 states, but we've got access to those things if you want, and we'll print up some special stuff for you if you're from out of state. And then the moral implications of using force to kill a threat, and then we start teaching you some little tricks and tips to, you know, get you started. It's by means just your foot in the door. It's the camel's nose under the tent, to steal our enemy's phrase. It's just the beginning of what you need, and then we encourage you to seek additional training, and we will direct you in those. And if need be, we can craft separate classes. We can do this every month. We got a guy coming in Thursday to resurface our range to make it so we can have more lanes. We're taking this very seriously here at the Church of Kauai. We want to create a open door policy for good lovers of Jesus Christ who want to protect themselves, their families, their faith, and their nation from whatever threat it is, foreign or domestic. And in cooperation with Code 20 and the people there, we're going to be able to train a lot of people and change a lot of lives.
Yeah, for the Code 20, you showed that clip of the guy going into the Detroit police station and just opening fire, so my thinking is before we break up, you show that clip, and then it'll be fresh in their minds, and you can explain to them what you see there actually is, if he had operated correctly with morality and cell warfare, he would have succeeded. He went in as a lone ranger with no morality, no authority, but still, I know Dutch, and Dutch will be able to take, you can take even a bad example becomes a good example when you tell people, this is what he did wrong, but look at how fast he did. He took on what, six guys at one time?
Yeah, got off several rounds, left.
Unbelievable.
Left and came back, you know. He did his Arnold Schwarzenegger, I'll be back, and after he checked out the federal police station. And we still haven't found out what his motives were, you know, but you can, like you said, like Steve says, you can take a bad situation and teach from it. This last Saturday, we had 19 or 20 people, and we were trying to teach them small squad tactics of movement. And before we brought them in there, we showed them from Gods and Generals, where Stonewall Jackson explains why he doesn't show fear on the battlefield, because everything's in God's hands. I'm paraphrasing. And then we showed them from Bravo 2-0, the true story of some British SAS guys during the first Gulf War. They got trapped behind enemy lines. They were out there to kill the Scuds, and they had to make a moral decision. A 9-year-old sheep herder boy saw him. He didn't have a weapon. He just stood there looking at him, and they decided, no, we're not going to kill him, which I'm not going to knock that because the kid wasn't armed, Coram Deo. But the kid ran off and got the Iraqi army, and so they ended up fighting for several days against hundreds and hundreds and hundreds of enemies. So we showed how a small unit of 9 men literally took on over 1,000 guys and did devastating damage because they were trained, they worked together, they focused on the task at hand, and some of them got out alive. Not everybody, but some of them did, and their story is very harrowing. So they, you know, made a mistake not aborting the mission and running back over and being, you know, being rescued. They decided to go on with the mission, even though they know they were possibly discovered by the small boys. So yeah, they made a mistake, but we can still learn from that.
Yeah, we also have the video, the actual live video taking in multiple firefights. The name of the video is Restrepo. I got it today, and it's got a lot of the F-bombs in there. But ladies and gentlemen, I mean, it's during real combat. There's a number of things to learn from there. One is the decision-making at the highest level of the Pentagon and the White House is just pathetic.
Yeah.
Cell warfare, they're walking into cell warfare and they're trying to do it like World War II. Then they go into the villagers and try to bribe them. Well, the guys are trying to bribe her, guess who?
The
Taliban.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's just crazy. And then, so we're going to have that during lunchtime, so you can sit and watch and you can actually see what happens when the Taliban, using cell warfare, are more than a match for the greatest of weapons and assets that we have. And that cuts back to what Dutch said earlier about the little boy being seen and, you know, abort the mission. Smallpox in the Revolutionary War was a major general with only 50 men. He never fired his pistol. He never pulled his sword. In fact, his sword was rusted shut in the scabbard. But what he did was he observed and watched the enemy, and using cell warfare, working with the locals around the area, was able to get messages back to the regulars and then burn up supplies and just drive Tarleton and Cornwallis literally into fatigue so they couldn't fight anymore, which is a huge deal on asymmetric or generation warfare, or just plain simple what it is, guerrilla warfare. So I'll be talking about that, and I got two small points to do here, Mr. Dutch, and I'll give
sure.
it back to you. We have the Alpha group will be the guys who went last time. They already heard the basic of S for SMEAC situation, and they will be. And then the other group, the Zulu group, will be the beginners. They'll hear that again, but the Alpha group will move on from situation, which encapsulates. Know the environment, know your friendlies, know your enemy. What gives you the authority to take human life? The difference between Sun Tzu and Oliver Cromwell, the law of nations versus the law of a tyrant emperor.
Mm-hmm.
The triangle of Islam proving that all Muslims are terrorists. And then the two series of photos proving that our highest elected officials are working with Hashim Thaqi, Al-Qaeda, Taliban, etc., and how our 16 intelligence agencies are actively recruiting for terrorists, and I've got all the proof there. None of it's made up. It's all there. Then the Alpha group that learned the situation now is going to graduate and go to the M in SMEAC mission. Number one, what is our goal? Mission is based on knowing situation. If we don't know the situation, we can't determine what our goal is, so we're going to go over briefly over environment, friendlies, and enemy. Islam is the enemy. And then we're going to add, define a Muslim. What is a Muslim?
Mm-hmm.
WWMD, what would Muhammad do? TMS, power, money, and sex. RPM, religious, political, and military. And therefore, we have to have a military potential group so that when Islam does ignite and start killing us, we're ready to take them down. MPH, which is Muslims per host. We'll talk about strategy and tactics depending on the mission, which depends on the situation. They build one step upon the other. And then when you go out to the range, Dutch does a great job of weaving that together as you actually start learning how to hold your pistol and things of that nature, too.
Yeah, it's got to be remembered. Something you said earlier in that last section there made me think that battles are not always won on the front lines, but they can be lost in the supply lines. And
big time
attack and harassment of their supply lines. Napoleon was a great modern military general, one of the greatest. We may not like what his objectives were, but he maintained the quartermaster corps, the ambulance corps, all those things that were necessary. He knew that simply leading a group of men across and telling them to rape, pillage, and burn for their supplies was not going to be enough, because there were atrocities that the French army did. But great armies like Gustavus Adolfo, the Swedish king, who came down and from Sweden to save Germany from the Catholics after the Reformation. He made sure all of his men were just and honorable, like Washington did later, and he won battle after battle with a much smaller force against the greater Catholic forces. And he ended up giving his life in battle for Germany. He wasn't even doing it for the greatness of Sweden or Finland or later Norway. And these smaller groups learned that when you fight in a righteous manner, in a systematic modern manner, like Gustavus was the father of modern warfare. If a lot of the people at West Point will tell you that, if they still teach it, they may not. But he learned how to use artillery with small unit tactics. He learned how to use his infantry effectively. But you don't have to have 10,000 men. You can have 10 people and get the same type of impact if you use them wisely. That's the key. We had when we had our training on Sunday this time, we had 19 or 20 people, and I was teaching them quick reaction drills. You know, enemy front, enny right, enny left, peel right, all that kind of stuff. And after stumbling through it a few times, the housewives and the grandmas started getting it. And if I can do that with housewives and grandmas, guess what I can do with guys like Lou and people of his age? We can give you some skills that you can. Just the fact that you're doing it will strike fear into your enemy when they see you forming up with interlocking fields of fire, and they're like, uh-oh, these guys know what they're doing. These aren't sheep.
Right on. And it dovetails right back into know your enemy, know your situation, code 20. This Sunday we're going to have a gigantic counter demonstration against the Muslim Brotherhood. Everybody now, because of Egypt, knows who the Muslim Brotherhood is. So what's going on is that using code 20, one of our people found out that two guys, Siraj Wahaj and Amir Abdul Malik, who are both involved with the Muslim Brotherhood, are doing a fundraiser in Yorba Linda. So the code 20 guys, the code 20 guys, they contacted me, and I went, really, let's have some fun. So we have already contacted and spread the word to all of the authorities in Southern California. The mayor of Yorba Linda is getting so many emails from our people. We let the cat out of the bag on purpose to do this, to manipulate her. Normally we don't use this kind of tactic, but in this kind of a deal, we want her dog tired by the time we show up, and she's already beginning to cry, uncle, uncle, please, no more of these emails. We've also brought in another constitutional attorney, joined our ranks, and I would say probably... oh, I would say at least 130 people now are sending me emails. I can't keep up with it. But it all goes back to Code 20, and it goes back to what Dutch and I are teaching, which is it comes out of Oliver Cromwell and George Washington and the American military way of battle planning, of learning the SMEAC, situation, mission, execution, administration, command and control. All five are woven together. They don't stand on their own. The situation doesn't stand on its own. The mission doesn't. The execution, what you're doing, how you perform it doesn't. The administration, a lot of people go, administration? I don't need administration. Really? Well, who's in charge? You got 500 privates in charge or 500 generals in charge? You got
That's a
nightmare.
Riot.
That's a riot, exactly. And then the command and communication, how do you get the word out and communicate? Now, as a result of doing this, we found something else through another code guy. Said the sheriff of Los Angeles County, Sheriff Baca, is in bed with the Muslim Brotherhood. He even admitted it stupidly. We've got it. And so now we are already working on our next objective, And that's a lot of people don't understand that in battle planning. You don't do just one deal where you got to tie this thing all together. We got to keep the momentum going. And once again, that goes back to the Church of Korea. None of this would have happened without the Church of Korea, without Dutch, without Pastor Warren, Stacy and Lou, and the good folks up there helping out. So we got some really exciting things coming, as it says in the Bible, in the fullness of time. When God wants things to happen, you look at it, you see Jesus is born in the fullness of time. Victor Hugo said there's nothing more powerful than an idea come of time, which basically he repackaged what the Bible says in the fullness of time. So it's exciting right now. Things are starting to not add up. They're starting to smash into Islam. They're starting to wake up. And once again, so the New World Order, the Islam, all of this stuff is all wrapped together. It's all under the worship of Satan.
Yeah.
And I will shut up for a few minutes for my good friend Dutch.
Well, you make some really good points there, and it's true. This is all, and the teaser I did in the last half hour, last hour, was that whatever we're teaching you here doesn't necessarily have to be just about Islam. We may deal with Islam, it may recoil in fear, or God may give us victory over him, we don't know. And then the next threat comes up, the next threat after that. It could just be, like we talk about as a joke, it could just be hippie zombies from San Francisco coming after your stash after an economic collapse. These tactics apply to any enemy. In fact, one thing that we've seen through history is that the better trained, smaller units seem to have an edge over professionally conscripted or rogue elements of the enemy. So it's always key that you do that, that you have your training no matter how big you are. Don't neglect training. Don't neglect communication. Don't neglect command and control. Now, I may be throwing something out here, and if you haven't thought about it, I understand, and I should have sent it to you in an email, but Muammar Gaddafi is stepping down from power right next door to Egypt in Libya. Those of us that have been alive long enough remember, 41 years he's been a menace. He quieted down after Reagan tactically bombed one of his families, killed some of his kids. But he tried to hand over his leadership to his children. They ended up being somewhat retarded. He's in fear, according to what I've been reading, of the Muslim Brotherhood leaking over from Egypt into Libya. And he's actually going to turn the country back over to the monarchy that he took it from. Do you have any thoughts on that?
That's amazing. I actually did my dissertation years ago at the end of college on Muammar Gaddafi. I was preparing to go back into the Marine Corps as an officer, and I knew our next war was going to be in the Middle East, and so the Arab League and Muammar Gaddafi, he actually tried to join Libya and Egypt together, and they did some bizarre things.
Mm-hmm.
But he is a survivor. He's clever as a fox. He was actually trained by the English. I think he graduated from Sandhurst, you know, which is like our West Point in England. He's not a dummy. He is a Muslim, so that takes about 90% of his brain power away just to try to hold on to Islam. I mean, you waste so many little gray cells, as Hercule Poirot said. But he's probably socked away like Mubarak. Mubarak is considered to be worth $70 billion.
Yeah, it would make him the richest man in the world. That would make him richer than Bill Gates.
Exactly. So here's the United States sending over all of this foreign aid and everything to help the people in Egypt who are now going crazy because the Muslim Brotherhood's got them, you know, in a bridle and driving that horse. And Mubarak, being the good Muslim, people don't understand. It always comes back to Islam, because under Islam, they don't have a golden rule. Do unto others as you would have done unto yourself. So like when they offered George Washington to be basically king, and he turned it down, no, I'm just going to be president. And so in the Muslim world, it's screw unto others before they screw unto you.
Sure.
And in fact, I was listening to one of the Israeli political scientists, and says, with all due respect to America and the United Kingdom, you can't create a constitutional republic or democracy out of Islam. It's impossible, because they don't have the law written in the heart, and they don't have the golden rule. So they just steal, lie, cheat, murder, which brings us back to Muammar Gaddafi. I wonder how many people he has murdered, killed, thrown in prison, everything else. So he's probably got, I would estimate, a minimum of $3 billion And just like Mubarak, the Middle East Christians that I work with are so funny. I say to them, so where will Mubarak go when he flees? Will he go to Saudi Arabia? And they go, no. He can only go to Europe or America or Canada because everywhere, all of the Muslim countries will kill him.
Yeah.
And the same thing with Muammar Gaddafi. So if Gaddafi is actually going to turn it back over to the king, I remember that's what I did my dissertation on, was how he wrested power from the king of Libya and took over. So that's, I'm going to have to research that tomorrow. I mean, that's, and once again, it goes back to Islam. That's Islam. They just, so every cent you give to a Muslim, he's not going to give it to his kids or to his wife.
Yeah.
He's going to rip it off.
If he can buy appeasement by giving it back to the heirs of the monarchy that he deposed, and maybe they won't come after him and try and kill him once they get control of the state. So he'll probably end up like Arafat's family in France or something, living the high life there. Let's turn our heads to Indonesia. There's actually Muslim infighting in Indonesia to the point so bad that the Indonesian secular government has banned an entire sect of Muslims because it angered the other Muslims. Now, this sect, I can't remember the name, it was Hiba Jiba or something, states... which is apostate to their belief that Muhammad was not the final prophet, that there will be more. And so now good Muslims, like the maniacs that we know about, are dragging them from their mosques, torturing, shredding them, burning them alive. And the Indonesian government's answer to that is to ban the religion of the victims. Not to protect them or do something to the bad guys, but to ban that supposed non-Muslim Muslim sect.
Yeah, Indonesia's been a hotbed. They've murdered a number of little girls and Christians over there, and in fact, had a picture with a family all driving. It looks like a Honda 50. So there's dad driving the Honda 50 with mom, and there's two little kids on it, and they got busted because mom's not wearing a burqa and veil. So once again, it fits back into Islam, which is the highest degree of hostility, disorder, poverty, slavery, and misogyny, the hate and distrust of women. One of the things the Muslims, like the Roman Catholics, criticize the Protestants and says, well, we only have one denomination. Well, Dutch just proved there is another denomination. Rest assured, they have at least 300 to 3,000 different denominations where it's the final prophet, the next prophet.
Oh, yeah.
You know, Khadija, the first wife, Aisha, the six-year-old girl he had sex with. I mean, they don't have the Gutenberg press, a.k.a. the Internet, to the degree that we have. And so we have, you know, if some of us disagrees with the theology of the church at Kuya or Joel Osteen or whatever else, under Protestantism, it's like, fine, go start your own church. See you later, dude. No big deal. They do the same thing. They just lie about it. And once again, what do? They blame the little guys who are not bothering anybody.
Right.
But once the real Muslims, what would Muhammad do? Go to murder them. Their solution?
Sure.
Murder them. Get rid of them. Problem done.
Yeah, you're not going to see us running down the street and burning a bunch of Mission Baptists because we don't like what they're saying. Well, we're going to take a break right now, Steve, so you're going to have to be quiet for a little bit, and we'll be back right after the break. Listen to the commercial. Go to DutchJones.info, DutchJones.info. There's a chip in there. We need $53 more to pay the electric bill. We got most of it covered. We need an additional $53, or we're not going to be on the air. So we'll be right back after this.
Cognac and cigar.
Excuse that they just hate Islam. And thank Allah, I'm a jihad boy. Well, I got me 5 wives, got me a hookah. One son comes up, a strap on my bazooka. One wife so ugly, I'm glad you wear a burqa. Thank Allah.
when the crash does come, when there is a natural disaster, during civil unrest, the last thing you want to be is a refugee. So check out DutchJones.info. That's www.DutchJones.info. We have the supplies you need and the information you will need. That's www.DutchJones.info. Okay, and we're back. This is Stronghold Radio coming to you via Liberty Tree Radio. We want to thank our friends over at Liberty Tree Radio for carrying our message from the church at Cahuilla that we bring you Monday through Friday for 2 hours a day, but 1 hour on Liberty Tree. And we want to thank all of our supporters and people who pray for us and wish us well. It's Tuesday. It's a very special Tuesday, as always. Every Tuesday is special. Because we have Steve Klein on the line from Code 20, AbolishIslam.com, AbolishIslam.com. Are you there, Steve?
Hey, I'm here. I'm glad to be on the show. Honored and humbled to be on with the famous Dutch Jones, Stacy, and Lewis. I'm just praying Lewis doesn't punch me out the next time I see him.
Yeah, we're keeping him control. We put a shock collar on him.
Not enough. Double it up.
Yes, yes, yes. So we've just been discussing future training, events around the world. So we're showing you the problem, but we're also giving you the solution. See, we're not one of those shows that just screams, the sky is falling, the sky is falling, aliens from another planet are controlling our president, the Illuminati are raping our children in our schools. We don't go around screaming about stuff without a solution. Code 20 is all about giving you... Oh, I thought you said this. Code 20 is about giving you the tools you need. The tools you need. You can have all the equipment in the world, but if you don't have the training, you're useless. Sure, you may get lucky here and there. God may protect you for some other divine reason, but overall, unless you take skills, teamwork, and equipment together with a coram deo in the face of God attitude, you're not going to succeed. And I know Steve shares that. Is that right?
Absolutely. Yeah, and it all goes back to the fundamental basis of what we're talking about, the law written on the heart, so that as we go through the battle training and the SMEAC and the shooting and all this stuff, it all has to come back to what in the world is this all about that we're doing. And so I have a book that I've written about this, and it's called Is Islam Compatible with the Constitution? And the big thing is, as we go through this, like Dutch said, are we just going to complain? Or as we do the battle planning, it's going to quickly dawn on anybody with any brains that all of our leaders are Benedict Arnold and Judas Iscariot, and they have sold us out. And so that leads us to, in the battle planning, we actually have to plan for what if everything falls apart, which I think everybody agrees it's going to. And then let's say, moreover, that in the county of Cahuilla or the Commonwealth of Cahuilla, that we actually take charge. Well, now we have to actually create our own government. We have to create our own government. So it's not set out by itself. And I know a lot of people say, well, what the heck does, you know, government have to do with the Bible? Well, if you just read Psalms 2, why do the heathen rage and the people imagine a vain thing? The kings of the earth set themselves and the rulers take counsel together against the Lord, Yahweh, and against his anointed, Jesus, saying, let us break their bands asunder and cast away their cords from us. Mm-hmm. And it's fascinating to me that in America today, so many pastors think, well, I don't have to preach about government. I don't have to talk about politics. Really? I just read it there in Psalms 2. And then the other day we were talking that, you know, the practical application of our deepest held and most cherished beliefs is known as politics. And of course, our deepest held and most cherished beliefs are known as religion. Therefore, religion is the basis of all government. Religion precedes or is before government, and government is ordained, Romans 13. So a pastor who gets up and says, I'm not going to concern myself with government or politics, you just spit in the face of God. You're not coram deo.
Right.
You spit in the face of God, because in Romans 13 it says, God ordains government and makes the civil magistrate the minister of God. And that's all Dutch and myself, Pastor Warren, has taught us this, that we're talking about. So come March 12th, Saturday, I hope a bunch of you show up. We got this thing, Dutch and Pastor and myself, Sergeant R., the other sergeant, Little Joe, who's going to turn professional cage fighter pretty quick. We've been working on this thing for years and years and years, and frankly, it's going good. It's going dynamite.
And we could, and you know, I don't want to put words in your mouth, but honestly, with the setup we have here, we could handle 40 people, no problem.
Oh, yeah.
We could easily train 40 people here, no problem. And if people didn't want to stay in hotels, they could come and camp on the property. We've had people sleep in the pastor's office before when we've done these things. We've had people sleep on the pews. People sleep here in the library on the table in front of the big fireplace. You know, they put down their bedroll and they love it. We've had people, we had a father and daughter sleep on our floor for two days of training that we did back in October. You know, it's good training, you know. It's not going to a 3-day seminar on plumbing. You know, you're going to get out and you're going to get to do some things and you're going to rub shoulders with people. So we could easily handle 40 people here. Nope. We've handled, I think the largest number we handled at once on a weekend was 260.
Wow.
And
you're
that,
good. I've been there.
Yeah. And 2 years ago we had 260. We did stuff on the range. We had wilderness survival class involved in that. We had videos. It was just amazing. And we had speakers, and it was like 9 to 5 every day, and we still threw in a Civil War Confederate dance on Saturday night. So
I slept.
Yeah, I know a lot of people did. I always do audio and camera, so I don't dance. I danced with my daughter the first year, and she was great at it, and I kept stepping on her feet. But we don't have to do that. If you don't have to dance, we may, you know, that's not going to be code 20. But that's the kind of thing that we do here. And
very professional. It's the best. It's the top.
With the upgrades to our shooting range, right now we're starting with pistol and maybe one person to two person type stuff. Maybe we'll do some team tactics. We've got a place where we can use airsoft and simmunitions. We have simmunitions it's a dairy barn that we've converted into a shoot house. We use simmunitions in there and airsoft. We don't use paintball because it's too much to clean up after. But honestly, the way some of the people shoot, you know, it's wild. But we can train you in everything. We've got enough experience with our teams that there's somebody for everything. We've got guys that can do wilderness survival. We've got people that can teach you what plants you can eat if that's what you want to get into. So if you're interested in this, you've got to contact us and let us know.
Yeah, one of these times what we'll do is an overnighter up there, and we can go out and you can learn land navigation, how to find the North Star in the daytime, how to watch the sun and calculate the general direction where you're going, things of that nature. And everything is all woven together. It's a beautiful tapestry. Dutch is teaching the great fundamentals and actually some pretty sophisticated stuff. I listened to him. It's very good. And now we're adding this video of actual combat with Restrepo, the movie, during lunchtime. And as you watch it, you'll see actual combat with soldiers, United States soldiers with the best equipment in the world doing a great job up against people that are doing cell warfare. And frankly, the guys doing a cell warfare, they're doing a damn good job. If the soldiers had leadership at the Pentagon and the White House and the flag grade, the generals and admirals, the soldiers would have wiped them out in a few minutes. So it's good to see what's going on, and then you're going to get the shooting, you're going to get the morality of why we conduct war, which I believe God has ordained. I just said it right there in Romans 13:3-4 says, Romans 13:3, for rulers are not a terror to good works, but to evil. So I just write in, hey, Dutch and I are a terror to evil. If we're not doing our job.
Right.
It says, wilt thou then not be afraid of the power? Do that, and that power is the Greek word exousia, which means, excuse me when you sneeze. It means by your authority, by your leave. And the power that it's talking about there is the power of God, specifically the Ten Commandments, and that is the power that he's talking about because that's the nature of God. Do that which, because then it says immediately, do that which is good. What is good? The law written on the heart is the nature of God. And thou shalt have praise for the same. For he is the minister of God to thee for good. But if thou do that which is evil, be afraid. For he beareth not the sword in vain, for he is the minister of God, a revenger to execute wrath upon him that doeth evil. And frankly, with the government that we've had in charge for the last number of years, they should be afraid of us. And what I see is a huge movement, especially with this thing in Egypt. And as it comes out that our government has been aiding and abetting and supporting the Muslim Brotherhood, Republicans and Democrats, it's going to be a lot of angry people. And so I can see the will of God working. He works in strange ways to us. He's in control. Dutch is doing a great job. Stacy Lewis, next time, my wife will be up there. Sergeant R's wife will be up there, Little Joe. Sergeant Stewart will be up there. You're going to have some guys walking around that you'll be glad they're on your side or you're on their side.
It's all about fellowship. Last Sunday in church, Pastor asked this question. Infidel, worse than an infidel.
If he same doesn't, thing. Yeah. 1 Timothy 5:8, absolutely.
Yeah. So that's why we do what we do. That's the moral authority by which we act. We follow fleshy generals and commanders and trainers because God has selected them and risen them up like he did Washington for a while. And Washington wasn't always perfect. In the Whiskey Rebellion, he was wrong. He should not have attacked those people in the Whiskey Rebellion, but that's what happens because we follow men. But if we follow God first, we won't make those mistakes.
Yeah, that brings up a great point. Once again, back to the Muslims, and I would assume the New World Order, because I would assume the New World Order is they're not Christians.
No.
And so when the New World Order or Islam criticizes us, we just say, you know what, we make mistakes, but we can go back immediately to what would Muhammad do, to the law, I'm sorry, to what would Jesus do, to the law written on the heart, to the golden rule, and we can correct whatever we do wrong. But in the New World Order, if they're atheists or Muslims, the Muslims go back to what would Muhammad do, and they make it worse. And the New World Order, I don't know what they do. They go stick their head in the toilet and flush it. I don't know what the world those guys use for morality. This Thursday night will be live on television. If you want, you can call in 5 p.m. California to 6:30 California. Dutch called in and went real good.
Sure.
I'll give the phone number a couple times. It's 661-233-8787, 661-233-8787. We're exposing Islam. I don't talk about the New World Order because we have over a million viewers. Allegedly, we signed a contract. We're supposed to have 320 million viewers pretty soon. But the second generation, Muslims and Middle East Christians, are here, and it's surprising how many of them call in.
Yeah.
And so we'll be talking about Sheriff Baca. We'll be, you know, how he's actually helping the Muslim Brotherhood. And then the big giant outreach in Yorba Linda. And you're all invited to go to that. If you want to call in the show or get the address to that, you can contact Dutch and I can get it to you. But it all fits perfect. It's all coming out of one place, the Church of Kauai. It's all coming out just from one place, the Church of Kauai. So I hope you guys are praying for the Church of Kauai, that you can come out. It's absolutely gorgeous. It's drop dead beautiful there. What do we have? About 8 people from Los Angeles and Oakland, and their jaws dropped. They were just, they didn't want to leave. They thought it was so beautiful.
Yeah, it was funny. Afterwards, after the classes, a few of the little Jewish ladies were walking around just soaking up the beauty, and we had to go looking for them because they were like, oh, a bear or a mountain lion didn't get them. It turns out they were in the kitchen having coffee, but it was great. The timing was perfect. It was beautiful all day, and as soon as we were done, the fog rolled in. It dropped 20 to 30 degrees. God definitely had his hand in the weather that day. Even clearing the fog in the morning, it was the first not foggy day in the valley, so people could drive in without being hindered. And in March, if it rains, we'll have canopies out. You know, this isn't. You know, we don't want to make you miserable, but we don't also want to just go, oh, no, it's raining. We can't train, you know. And then later on, as we get into rifle stuff and carbine stuff, If we're doing it in the summer and it's 100 degrees outside, you know, we'll take care of you. We'll make sure, you know, you show up with the right gear and right amount of water, and we won't kill you, but we'll push your limits a little bit to see where you stand so you know what you need to work on.
Yeah, exactly. And for those of you guys who are, you know, you can do the triathlon and stuff like that, you can lead the way up to the top of the hill. That hill behind it, how high do you think that is, about 500 feet or so?
It's exactly about 600 feet higher than we are, so that's 1,500 foot tops at the top of it. We're at 900 feet.
And it's extremely steep. Would you not agree?
Oh yeah, it's yeah, great relief in the. If you look at it on a map, the lines are real close together.
Right. So some of the tough young buckaroos, they can go up that thing like a mountain goat. I will get to the top about 5 minutes after that, and then there's a giant meadow up there, and we can shoot up there. I think it's pretty quiet up there. Those guys who want to do that. And for the real tough buckaroos, the third or fourth time that we go up there, we can spend the night up there, and we can put up glow sticks and shoot at them, and you can watch and see how to find the North Star for land navigation and listen to how different it is at nighttime, and then how you get disoriented and confused in the dark and then think that you have to fight in it. And even the modern soldiers with the night observation devices, they don't help that much. You'd be shocked. The bad guys, the Taliban, I was watching the movie today, Restrepo, and the captain in charge said he had heard it, but he never believed it, that the Taliban was able to get so close they were actually grabbing weapons out of the hands of the soldiers who had night observation devices on. Yeah. They're up around 12, 13,000 feet elevation, pitch black. The NODs need a little bit of light to work, and they're suffering from oxygen depletion, and so your senses start shutting down, and the Taliban was... So, you know, no matter how good a training, no matter how good your equipment is, somebody that takes time and they're willing to work something through can defeat you. A great example, and I'll turn it back to Dutch. I used to do prison fellowship ministry, and I was always astonished when I went into the prisons that they could get out and see all of the electronical surveillance devices and everything they had. But and these guys are, most of them are just average intelligence, nothing to shit, you know, they're not Lex Luthor. But I figured out real quick, given time and desire, even a slow-thinking human can defeat a very formidable enemy. Given time and desire, these guys would escape from prison. And the Taliban and the Muslims, when we first went in, we just kicked ass and took names, but we made a huge mistake. We stayed around too long. They figured us out, and now they're kicking ass and taking names.
And they did it to every group that they fought, so the British, the right. Look what they did to the Russians. Look, you know, it's, I don't know, I get so frustrated with it when it's like we helped train the Mujahideen in the 80s, but yet we didn't take notes. We didn't realize what they were doing to the Russians. I still love that video of Osama bin Laden saying, "Today the Russians, tomorrow the great Satan," when they gave him the Stinger missiles. Yep. You know, in an interview. And the interviewee's like, "What do you mean by that?" And he's like, "Well, when we get rid of the Russians tomorrow, we'll get rid of the Americans because we know they'll want to stay." And he was right.
And, you know, the leader of the CIA, I saw him interviewed, and he said he would do the same thing all over again. And then when I was watching the captain and the colonel in Restrepo, they were doing the same thing. They were trying to bribe these guys, saying, "We're going to build a road through here. We're going to make you guys rich." And I'm watching this going, the Taliban doesn't care about roads, and the Taliban does not care about money. Mm-hmm. They care about Sharia law and, you know, screwing unto others before they're screwed unto.
Advancing their way of life.
Exactly. They're Dawah. Yeah. Exactly. And so now we've got articles where it's coming out that Obama is actively aiding and abetting the Muslim Brotherhood of Egypt with his policy. I'll be talking about that on my TV show this Thursday. If you want to call in, it's 661-233-8787. It starts about 5 p.m. and it gets over at 6:30. I'm dealing with Middle East people and their clocks don't work.
What day is that? What day is that?
Thursday, this Thursday. It's every Thursday at 5 p.m. to 6:30. And we're growing leaps and bounds. We have 1 million viewers already, and it's growing rapidly. Last week, I had at least 5 Americans call in. I could tell by their accents that they were Americans. One guy was listening to Galaxy 19 or 17 or 97, something like that.
Yeah.
And he was from Missouri. We'd never heard of that before. So somebody's picking up our TV show. Some Galaxy satellite TV show is picking it up. So we could be as many as 2 million viewers. And you're welcome to call in. And no problem, 661-233-8787. And about, I have mentioned code 20 briefly on the show. I have to be a little bit more careful there because it's Middle East Christians. And they have families back in Egypt and Iraq, Syria, and they, if they recognize voices and things like that, if I get a little bit too militant, they will start pulling those folks out and killing them. It's for real.
Oh, yeah.
I know it sounds crazy, but they do.
That's the way they do. That's the way they deal with things. They use terrorism.
Islam.
Yeah, they just use force and everything. It's, I mean, if you got guys in America strangling their daughters for putting on half shirts and makeup, can you imagine what they're going to do for something like that?
Yeah, talk about that. That's happened at least 10 times that we know of, and probably 50 times the honor killings. Go ahead and talk about that.
Well, yeah, the honor killings, we see it in the media, and it kind of gets, you know, oh, don't judge all the Muslims by this. But for everyone we hear about, how many don't we know about? How many illegal alien Muslims are here that are children that get killed, and they're not on the system, and we don't find out about them because the father didn't like that she smiled at somebody, or the father didn't like that he caught her watching MTV. Now, I don't want my son watching MTV either, but I'm not going to strangle him over it. I'm going to teach him and educate him, which is what would Jesus do? What would Muhammad do? And it's just another vile, vile thing. And all these people in, you know, they're going to say, but you're judging all Muslims by them. No. If a Muslim is a real Muslim, they're going to obey these philosophical views, and eventually, when they're allowed to, they're going to follow them. Right now in America, they're not doing it in bulk because they're trying to occupy now. So they're not making these demands. They're not saying, oh, we have to do this, oh, we have to do that, because they want Uncle Sam to keep letting them bring their cousins and nieces and nephews over so they can get the population up. It's like last week, somebody went to one of the, the Student Association, the Muslim Student Association, and smuggled out what they were teaching them. Have a lot of babies, stay physically trained, stay weapon trained, and just wait for our population numbers to get up so that we can take over. It's just like Aslan or any of the other stuff we deal with. They're not stupid. They want to keep a low profile now. What happens is they don't have control over all their people, and you get some father that strangles his daughter or runs her over with a car.
Yeah, Dutch is absolutely right. 1,400 years coming on 1,500 years of Islam proves over and over and over again. And once again, you only need, like, in the American Revolution, what do we have, 5, 10, 15%? Civil War with Cromwell, 5, 10, 15%. If you have 5%, easy, in the Muslim world, easy, 5%, that's low. I would say at least 15%, maybe even 20%, that's 300 million people. And what happens in the Islamic world, these guys, they're like alcoholics. They got to go out and convert everybody. They got to turn everybody into a drunk. So these guys go out, while they're only a small number, 10 to 15%, they go out and kill people, murder them, and they drive the rest like a shepherd and sheep, like wolves and a sheep. And this is how Muhammad worked. In fact, they had music called the Galio, the blaring of horns when they attacked the villages in Spain for 700 years. They would blare horrible blast of these horns, which meant to the Spanish, little girls were coming to rape you and were coming to murder your men. For 700 years they did that.
Psychological.
Okay. Yeah, psychological. So, and that's the way Islam is. I mean, really, look, how many people are elected political officials in the United States? Less than 1%? Well, they drive us. They're driving us into political correctness. They're driving us into insanity with just less than 1%.
That's right. You've got the sodomite agenda. They supposedly only make up less than 10% of the population, but look how they're manipulating everything from curriculum to policy on marriage to hiring possibilities to insurance rules. Send it to me at dutchjones.info. So you just go to Dutch at dutchjones.info and just put in the subject line for Steve Klein, for Code 20, Abolish Islam, something like that. I will just write out, forward it to him. I'll just send it to him. I may read it to make sure it's not like, you know, something about puppies or something, because we hate that kind of stuff. Don't keep sending me that stuff. It's a waste of my time. But I'll forward it to him. If you're interested in taking this class, it is March. Let me look here, March 12th, which is a Saturday. It's the second Saturday in March. We can handle quite a few people, but you better get in early. It's $100 for one day of solid training, and you're not going to find this kind of thing anywhere else. You contact us for that. Please go to abolishislam.com, abolishislam.com. Take a look at it. That lets us know that you're listening. You can join the Facebook page through there, but it lets us know you're there. It gives us a head count so we can see what kind of impact we're having. And also go to dutchjones.info. We need $53 more to pay the electric bill this month. We're short $53 and what, 63 cents? 70 cents. And I'm dead serious. We don't have the money to pay it. Some people, you know, it's half covered by donations. But you see it only $70 on there. So this costs money to do this. But if you enjoy what we're doing, pray for us and donate. So remember, the sword is heavy, the battle is hard, but victory belongs to the Lord alone, but he's asking you to stand in the gap. So I want to thank Steve for coming on with us. He's already disconnected, so he can't say anything. And I want to thank you for tuning in. I want to thank Liberty Tree Radio for always being our big sister network. And from everybody here at Stronghold Radio, coming to you from Kauai, for Pastor Warren Mark Campbell, the folks that go to church here, we want to thank you for tuning in and say God bless you and all you do in the holy cause of liberty. God bless you all.